Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below. There's a lot of conflicting information out there when it comes to how to best coach your salespeople. You read books, you follow thought leaders, but it's difficult to strike that balance between the anecdotal and the scientific, or the coaching of human behaviors and then the numbers. But that's where my guest's competency frameworks come in. I'm Sarah Hicks, and coming up on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about sales coaching, mapping, scoring, and coaching key competencies in the SDR and AE roles. He has 13 years of sales enablement, coaching, and hands-on training experience in multinational, corporate, and startup business environments around the globe. He successfully led sales transformations in many verticals, notably taking an HR tech business to IPO in 2014. He's a qualified coach and practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming and neurosemantics, and a passionate SaaS sales enablement leader, guest speaker, and mentor to managers and professionals globally. He specializes in highly immersive, bespoke B2B sales training and coaching experiences, which not only teach advanced skills and techniques, but help participants better challenge their own beliefs and assumptions to create new self-learning pathways. Aaron Evans, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. What a wonderful introduction as well. You're making me blush, Sarah. That's very, very kind of you.
Well, we're really, really excited to have you on. I think this is going to be a really interesting episode. To give our listeners some context, why don't you give us your background and kind of how you found your way to sales enablement?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So I many, many years ago, way before it was called sales enablement, I was working for a multinational publishing house called Reed Business Information many, many years ago. And I was only actually selling for a very short period of time until they moved me into a training and coaching role, as they understood that it was a passion that I had and a skill set that I had. And I spent the last 13 or so years traveling the globe, working for lots of different organizations, as well as consulting on my own, coaching, training, developing people, and obviously getting the most out of people. And along that journey, I've managed to pick up lots of different processes, techniques, accreditations, and best practices along the way, which I'm really happy to share with you today.
Awesome. So let's talk about the idea of sales process, or kind of sales enablement. If you could kind of encapsulate what you think that means for us.
Yeah, sure. So let's talk about something like a guided sales process. A guided sales process is basically the tasks that someone needs to do with an opportunity to progress it from when it's first engaged right through to when it turns into contracted business. And along the way, we either decide whether we want to qualify that opportunity out so it's not right for us, or we want to take them on that journey. It all starts with sales process, right? The sales process that you use is the common language that every single person in the organization speaks. So as an example, if I say to you, Sarah, this opportunity is in discovery, we are looking at the overall metrics of the organization from a company, departmental, and individual level, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's the important thing. It becomes almost the lens at which we look through every single opportunity. What we can then do is we can then start examining the competencies that need to sit within each task of the sales process. So let's look at the example that I've just given you there, finding the overall company metrics of a department. So how do we get you to ask better questions? How do we get you to take the conversation to a strategic level? How do we get you to engage multiple stakeholders who hold the budget, who can give you the answers to those questions? How do we get you to build a business case around that information? And that's when we start talking about competency-based coaching.
Okay, got it. Talking about competencies, how do you kind of map or pick out the skills and competencies that you're looking for in the sales process?
Yeah, again, really good question. I think you do it by several ways, right? You talk about the competency, which is the skill that they need to have. You look at the behavioral traits, and you also look at the knowledge that they need as well, and you group it into those three areas. I think for the purpose of the conversation today, we'd look at the actual competency itself, so the skill that they need to have. So let's take the role of an SDR. Like, in my experience, the role of the SDR is to go out there, to find opportunity, to engage that opportunity, to get the customer excited enough to sit a demonstration, learn about a bit of pain from the customer. You might use BAN or PACT as your qualification methodology there, to learn about those four things, and then ultimately get the customer prepared, excited, and inspired to turn up to the demonstration, knowing that they're going to be speaking to an AE or an SAE. So let's look at the competencies that are involved in that. Well, first of all, being able to introduce your product, to give a hook, being able to turn around and say, hi, my name's Aaron Evans. I'm calling from XYZ. The reason I'm getting in touch with you is because that's a competency, a skill that we'd look at. And then we'd start scoring on that competency. So let's use one to three as an example. One, Sarah, you're really bad at it. We need to do a lot of work. Or three, you're amazing at it. Keep going like this and you'll be an A in a matter of no time. But the key thing is here, right, is that people talk about coaching as being this sort of ethereal thing, that, you know, I'm just going to coach now. But actually very focused, very narrow, very specific coaching is what wins the race. So if I leave a call and there's two or three key things that you need to work on, and we solely concentrate on those for the next week, 2 weeks, we can get you better at those particular functions or skills really, really quickly and ultimately make you better. So that's one example. Now, when you distill it down to ultimately what we're trying to achieve is that we're trying to take an unconscious incompetence, right? So something you don't know you're terrible at or don't know that you're bad at. And we're trying to turn that into an unconscious competence, an unconscious competence. So you're so good at it, you don't even think about it anymore. The journey that we go on is, Sarah, we alert you that you have an unconscious competency. That's the first thing. There's something you didn't know you were terrible at. Next, we let you know, here's what good looks like, right? So it's now a conscious incompetency. I now know where I'm going wrong. Let me try and turn that into a conscious competency. So now I know how to do it well. And if you do it long enough, it becomes an unconscious competency that I've been doing it so well for so long now, I don't even think about it. Like driving a car. When you first stepped in a car, you didn't have a clue what anything meant. And now you can drive for 6 or 7 hours while doing your makeup in the mirror, and you can get there absolutely fine without thinking about it. And that's because it's now an unconscious competency.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. So how do we pinpoint, so taking that SDR as an example again, so we know the competencies that we'd like them to have over the course of when they hand off that opportunity to the account executive. How do you pinpoint where the incompetencies are? Where are the shortfalls, pitfalls? How can you find them?
Yeah, really good question. Again, I think, it comes back to this is the part of the coaching where a lot of managers struggle, I think, is that you've got to sit down and you've got to listen to the call with the rep, right? You've got to dial into their calls. You've got to do call reviews. We're really fortunate in the modern day where we've got products like Gong, where actually you can build a competency scorecard within that product and it can do that for you, right? So there's products out there that can do it. There's old fashioned call listening. There's old fashioned dual listening where you're sitting on the call live or you're working with them. I'd recommend building out a scorecard based on the methodology that you use. So literally write down every single skill that the salesperson needs, and then you want to mark those scores as they go through the call and see whether they're doing it or whether they're not doing it or whether they're doing it well. But again, like where I think a lot of organizations fail is they try and eat the elephant whole. So they go, right, I'm going to coach you on being a salesperson. It's like, well, where do you start, right? Like there's so many disciplines involved in a 360 sales role. And you've got to do it in bite-sized pieces. Several reasons for that. Number one, it's the best and most effective way of learning is if you tackle small things. But second of all, it's more fun. If you're basically, imagine a really good way of looking at it is that I ask you to bake a cake. Yeah. I say to you, here's all the ingredients, go and bake a cake. Now you'll come back and the cake will probably be wrong, right? Or if the cake is wrong and it tastes disgusting, you can't just turn around and go, right, get better at it. You'd work on one thing at a time. You go, well, let's start, right? Did you look at the ingredients? No. Okay, well, let's start there as an example. Or, you know, what's the first thing that you did? I added the flour. Okay, let's talk about how you did that. So you've got the methodology, which is what to do. The sales process, which is what to do. But then you've got the methodology, which is how you do it. And people conflate those two things. They think the methodology and the process are the same thing. They're actually intrinsically different. So the methodology should be about score-based coaching. How are you doing it? You know, how well are you doing it and how are you doing it? So that would be my advice, is to listen as much as possible, to understand where they're going wrong, and then focus narrowly on those things and then scorecard those things and track improvement as you score it.
Okay, great. Well, let's talk more about scoring then. Give us an example of the SDR role and then the AE role. What are the skills that you think people should be scoring, and how do you score them?
Yeah, well, look, I think there's a couple of parts to this which is really important, is that, as we well know, there's several, again, I think where people go wrong is they look at a sales process as a set of calls. So your introduction call, your questioning call, your close call, it doesn't work like that. These are lots of different activities that happen during the life cycle of the opportunity. So the first thing you look at is, you know, the sales process is the life cycle of the opportunity. Your objective as a salesperson is to move the opportunity from stage to stage by completing the tasks. Not, okay, we have a first call, then we have a demo call, and then we have a close call, because each customer is different. But then when you break down that process, within each section of the process, we start looking at the tasks that need to be achieved. So let's look at the identify stage as an example, which is typically the work of the SDR. The tasks that would sit in there would be SQL criteria, so sales qualified lead criteria. Are we speaking to the right person? Yeah. Are they the right profile customer? Are we finding their pain, right? So are we finding a pain or an objective that they're looking to solve? Are they committed to solving this problem and motivated as a business? And is this someone who can influence a budget? If we've got those things, we can turn around and go, this is a pretty solid lead. So let's look at those in terms of a skill set. First of all, is introducing the product to the person you're selling to in an eloquent way that articulates the value prop. Second of all, is then trying to learn about their pain or need. So trying to find what the problem is in context of your product. Once you've found that, it's then about, you know, demonstrating some value quickly and how we can help them overcome that need, which would be, you know, fair exchange of value or presentation of value. Then it'd be about learning a bit more about them and their process and their involvement in it. And lastly, it'd be closing for the demonstration for them to go, we agree to do that. So we've just spoken about five disciplines that sit within there. Now, if you imagine within an SDR role, even perfecting one of those to be able to turn around and go, you can articulate the value proposition well to this particular customer with this particular problem. That's just one profile customer and one persona, right? I don't know, you know, obviously people work in different industries that have lots of different buyer types or different markets or subsectors or whatever. That's just one part of it. Let's talk about how we'd score that, right? First of all, we'd need to look at a benchmark, right? So the very best person in your business, that would be a 3. Someone who's not doing it to the best, that would be a 0. And then once you've got that kind of, you know, true north number, that would be your 3, and the terrible one would be your 1. And anything in between there would be your 2. So your objective is to get someone up to a 3 as quick as possible. But this is where it becomes really interesting, is what you're actually doing is your contingency coaching for their next role. So if you get them doing those skills well and they're doing it all to 3s, we can then start adding other competencies in there, which would be their next role, which might be an AE or for an AE to be an SAE, right? So we can start drip feeding them other competencies, which is great because then you've basically got contingency. So the dream of any business is that whenever you lose someone, everyone along the line moves up. So all you're ever hiring is at the very, very bottom because it's cheap, it's easy, and you can hire people with no experience. So you can just coach them and train them and they're malleable and they're usually graduates, so they're still in that learning mode as well. That's the dream. So you should be setting someone up next for their next role. So a competency framework can actually start becoming a bit of an aspirational thing as well. If you're an AE and you feel that you're good at the job, you can start saying, well, look, let's start looking at the competencies that are involved in me moving an SDR, and let's start looking at the competencies that need to move into an AE. You can start working on those competencies as well.
Cool. So talk to me about what those competencies are for the AE role and how we would score them as well.
Yeah, again, like obviously they're doing more of a 360 role, right? So when you hand the opportunity over them, the level and the depth of the discovery they're doing is much, much deeper than, say, an SDR, right? So their discovery stage is going to be much, much deeper. So we're talking again about overall company goals, departmental goals, individual goals, agreed pain and urgency to solve that pain, understanding of their current tools and the reasons for using those tools, a gap analysis. So where are they in their targets? Where do they need to be and how do they get there? Criteria, what would make them decide to purchase a product, so understanding what that decision criteria is. So again, we're talking about lots of different subsections of skills that that person would need. And then we'd score them against those as well to make sure that they're improving as they go. There's a great company at the moment called E4 Enable that work out of the UK. Now they've seen this as being like a real important thing, and they realize that organizations don't do it well. And they've built a product that actually plugs in to LMSs, to you know, your call analytics, and they can actually start doing this for you, where they start allowing the organization to list those competencies and red, amber, green scoring against those competencies as well. And I think it's a massive trick that organizations miss, because first of all, again, it's like it's an aspirational thing. It can plug into personal development programs. But second of all, why would you not have metrics and criteria to see what good looks like and what improvement looks like? If you look at your role as an example, how many times has someone sat down with you, and this might be different in your job, but I speak to SDRs all the time, and they say that their manager hasn't sat down with them and said, I used to be this good, at asking questions. I'm now this good. The next step for me is getting this good. But more importantly, here's what I need to do to get there. It's so powerful. Like, it's prescribed learning based on a metric.
Yeah. I think that comes back to kind of the theme that I mentioned at the beginning. It's really tough to coach. It's that fine balance between coaching just the behavior and then actually referring back to metrics. And I think it's often difficult for SDRs or AEs alike to sort of draw the parallel between the behavior that they're learning and what the actual output change is going to be. So I think this is a really interesting way to do that, because a competency is something qualitative, but scoring it makes it quantitative. And that, gives it that data-driven approach, and it's much more tangible that way.
Exactly right. And I agree with you, particularly in the SDR role, way too much emphasis is put on grit and attitude and determination. All of that stuff is a given, right? Like, we expect SDRs to have that because they're at the bottom of the chain. You know, they've got to prove their worth. You know, if they're hungry about doing the role and getting a career in sales, they should do that. Not enough is spoken about competency for SDRs. And it's really interesting for me. I've seen this lots of times where an SDR goes into the job and they start by thinking it is about numbers and just banging your head against the wall. And to a degree it is. It should be about making lots of calls and lots of engagements and connects and whatnot. But then they start working out something that works. They're like, oh, when I do this, it works. And then they start refining it. And then they start getting it better. And then they start listening to their calls. And then one day, it might be 3 months, it might be 6 months, something clicks. And they no longer sound like an SDR who's green and doesn't know anything about the market. They're giving insight. They're offering up value to the customers they're speaking to. They're challenging the customers. They know more than some of the customers they're talking to. They can give insight. They can use skills. They can soften their questioning so it doesn't sound like a questionnaire anymore. They know when to ask the right question. They know when to accept the objection and when not to accept the objection. And again, if you can hardwire this and almost like hack it so you can do it much quicker and guide the rep through that process, you can save 3 to 6 months where they can do it within a month, 2 months and do it to a good quality. And you're not just sitting there going, oh, you've made $1,000. You're showing a lot of grit today. It's like, you're forcing me to because I'm having to learn on my own, right? Yeah. It will always be a numbers game. And like, sales is the Benjamin Button of careers. You start by doing the absolute hardest thing in sales. Like, if you were to grab an AE off your floor now and say, go and do cold calling, they couldn't do it because you get flabby and you get lazy and you don't get very good at it. Cold calling someone and asking them to sit down for 45 minutes to look at a product is the hardest job you'll ever do in sales. I don't care what anyone says. And it gets progressively easier. And I feel for SDR. So why don't we concentrate on the competency? Why don't we concentrate on the skill? Let's make them better from day one.
Yeah, makes sense. So then let's talk about that improvement. So you mentioned some of the ways to do that are like listening to that calls, listening in on calls or listening to the call recordings, really being there to kind of experience all the aspects of whether it's the SDR or the AEs, their whole kind of journey with the customer. How do you go about improving or training or whatever once you actually have nailed down what that incompetency is? How what's the framework for improvement?
Well, let's talk about the coaching, right? So you just raised something really interesting there, is that your role as a manager or as a coach or as sales enablement or whatever it is to identify the unconscious incompetence. So find out where they're going wrong and they don't go wrong. Your next role is to make them aware of everything else, right? So what you're ultimately trying to do with SDRs is you're trying to create a self-awareness in performance and behavior. So you start by coaching, and coaching starts becoming a habit. And when coaching becomes a habit, they become self-analytical. When they become self-analytical, they spot these problems themselves, right? So I love to use this as an example, right? If you were to come to me, Sarah, and say, where do you keep your scissors, as an example? The easy thing for me to say to you is they're in the third drawer down of the kitchen. Now, you've not learned anything in that process. You'll go and pick up the scissors, you'll use them, you'll put them back, and you'll forget where they were. The next time you come to me, you'll go, oh, where do you keep your bread knives? And I'll tell you the same thing again. Now, what a coach should do is they should make you aware of that process. So when you come to me and ask me where the scissors are, my first question would be, where would you keep them? And you'd go, probably in the kitchen. Okay, whereabouts in the kitchen would you keep them? Probably in the drawers. Which drawer would you keep them in, Sarah? I'd keep them in the third drawer. Okay, go and have a look. And then you go there and you've learned something along that way, right? So you've through guided discovery, you've come up with that yourself. Now, the next time you ask me a question, where do you keep your bread knives? You'll say internally, you'll go, you know what Aaron's going to say? He'll say to me, where would you keep them? Where would I keep them? So you start coaching yourself, right? So with enough touch points and enough habit, you start getting reps self-aware of these unconscious incompetencies, and they start spotting them quicker. Now, when you think about that competency matrix, what you're looking to see is this, and this is typically the life cycle of learning in a competency, is that they don't know they've got a problem, then they realize they've got a problem, but then they catch themselves making that mistake. And then they'll go, shit, I just made a mistake. But then if you, with enough coaching, they change behavior before they make the mistake. So they're about to make it and then they go, hold on a second, and then they do it the right way. So they've adapted in real time the learning that they've had over the last week, 2 weeks, whatever that is. So that's how you coach it. You constantly question for them to get to the end and then question their strategy. How would you do it? What could potentially go wrong? And if that did go wrong, what would you do differently? So you're constantly getting them to create these examples in their head and sub-strategies as well, and then go and execute on those sub-strategies. Then when they execute, you bring it back in and go, let's have another look at it. How do you think it went? And then they can critique their own work. And that's so powerful. As soon as you've helped someone to see things, to see things a certain way, it becomes incredibly powerful. And again, it's a laborious process and it takes time. And that's why organizations don't like to invest in it, because it is very time consuming.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I think when people are talking about the skills that an SDR needs, a lot of people say they need to be like self-motivated and all of these things, but then the coaching doesn't necessarily enable them to do that.
Agreed.
And that's really interesting, because this is how you basically put the ball in that SDR's court. They learn much more by, as you're saying, kind of seeing the whole process and how you got to from point A to point B, instead of just saying like, this is how you should have done it. Then that's so difficult, because they've got to kind of work backwards and figure out how to do that and change the behavior from deep down underneath. But by giving them that opportunity to work their way through it, you kind of make them that self-motivated learner.
Yeah, I mean, like the statistics around it are staggering, right? And we've seen it as a new module in parenting now, as an example, where historically in parenting, we reward the outcome. So your child paints a lovely picture and you go, oh, that's a beautiful picture, well done, I'm going to put it on the fridge. But actually, if you really want to coach them, you turn around and say, let's talk about how you did that. Oh, I started by drawing the sun up here, then I drew the sea, then I did this. So then you're learning about the process in which they did it. Then you reward the process. I think you did that the right way. And then you give them a thumbs up for doing that, and then you put it up on the fridge. The outcome is the outcome. Like, you know, if they've done it right, they might have done it right by fluke or by accident. What we really want to learn about is the journeys. Yeah. So more the journey and less the destination.
Awesome. So you mentioned statistics there, or kind of metrics around this. Let's talk about that. What are the results or statistics that you see in organizations when they implement and coach competencies like this?
Oh, I mean, there's so many great studies done on this. I think I read a statistic the other day, which it increases average order value by 23% when you have a robust coaching structure in place. The number of reps that hit target, you see that go up. I don't have the numbers on me, but again, for organizations that have a formal coaching program within their organization, that's from the managers right through to the coaches and the sales enablement. But for me, the most important thing and the biggest light that it shines on, I think it's something as ridiculous as 17% increase in overall results from a revenue point of view of organizations, those that have a formal coaching structure in place. And I'll send you over the sources for that as well. Yeah, but it makes complete sense, right? I mean, I like to look at it from a sports point of view. Like, you have coaches that are concentrating on each player's certain aspects or part of their game that they need to improve. Why would you not do that in the workplace, in that setting? I know you're Canadian, right? I mean, you look at it from a hockey point of view, you have different positions within a hockey team. You have different players who need to do different things. You have different tactics that sit within there, and you have different structures that sit within a hockey team as well. Yeah. You don't just chuck them all on a pitch and go, right, go and do your best and see how you get on.
Yeah.
You have people coaching those
skills. Better at hockey, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Go and get better at hockey. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like you try and find the weak points, right? You try and find where they need improvement, you work on it. At the same time, you try and find what they're good at, and you try and get that extra 10-15% out of what they're good at as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if I'm kind of understanding, the role of coaching is around the competencies and the sales enablement side, and then sales process is sort of training. Like, sales process is the knowledge and the actual like hard I don't know how to kind of frame it, but it's coaching is something that kind of sits in the nuance, mm-hmm. whereas, and so that's the sales enablement side. And then sales process is more around the hard skills that you need. And so training would sit there and coaching is something different.
Exactly right. So a good way of looking at it, and I think the numbers around this are about, when it comes to learning, about 20% of it is training, which is transacting knowledge. Like me saying to you, E equals MC squared means that, you know, the theory of relativity, you now know that. But to understand it, we've got a coach on it. We've got to now sit down and go, well, why does it mean that? And this is where you learn about the reason behind it, the process and how it works. And then you train and you implement the skill when you get better at the skill when you improve. So sales training, people spend millions of dollars every year on sales training. It's about 20% of learning. People leave a classroom and go, that was really interesting, right? And they go back to what I'm doing for the last 10 years. Really what you want is someone there analyzing the performance and improving on that performance and making sure that the competency is getting refined and better. Beautiful way of putting it around getting the nuances behind it, because that's ultimately what it is the nuance.
So for the sales managers listening right now, who have taken this to heart and are now thinking about implementing coaching for the first time, what is the first thing that they should do if they're trying to establish a formal coaching process that's going to in turn increase revenues by 17%?
Yeah, good question. So I think the first thing you do is you sit down and you look at every single skill that you want a rep to have within their job. And then the next thing you do is you analyze each rep on those skills. And then you find two or three things that you want them to work on, and then you coach them through that process. I'd do as much reading on coaching as a skill as possible, or I'd just pester your management to put you on a coaching course to make sure that you can leave with the fundamentals and the skills to be able to do that. The first thing you can do, which I think is absolutely critical, is whenever someone asks you a question, ask it back as a question. So get into the habit of asking questions back. So your objective is for them to leave the conversation with an answer to their own question that they've come up with and a strategy on how they're going to execute that, and then to feedback to you on how that went. That's a really good place to start, is getting into the habit of asking those questions. And remember, you've got to know what good looks like as well. So a lot of people just coach without really knowing what you know, whether they're doing the right thing. But someone once told me, and I think this really resonated with me, is that you just got to assume that everyone either knows the answer or knows how to get to the resource of the answer. They don't need you for the answer. And if you can help them see that very quickly, you can sort of see how coachable someone is. No matter what that is, if they ask you a question, help them come up with the answer themselves or find the resource on how to come up with the answer.
Amazing. Well, any other last words of wisdom around sales enablement or sales process that you want to leave with the listeners for today?
Yes, I think, look, if you don't have a defined sales process, go and write one up. Write down what needs to take place in the process of someone purchasing your product. Write down the tasks that need to take place within there and make sure that your team are executing on it. And if you ever want any tips or any advice, feel free to get in touch with me on LinkedIn or drop me an email. I'm more than happy to help people in any way that I can. Something that I'm particularly passionate about, and I know the value that it brings to organizations. And I recommend that you push it in your business as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Aaron, for being a guest on the Predictable Revenue Podcast. This was, incredibly interesting for me. We've never had somebody talk about sales enablement and coaching in this way. So this is an incredible kind of fresh take on that. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners, whether they're SDRs, AEs, or on the management kind of coaching side, are going to have a lot to take away from this episode. As you just mentioned, if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to learn more from you, they can do that on LinkedIn. So we'll be sure to include a link there for when people listen to the episodes so that they can. Thank you so much. It was really wonderful having you.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much.
See you guys again next time.